Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Well, welcome to all of you, whether you're listening via the Eid Meeting Wave 1548 audio streaming Radio Islam on the DSTV 826 and on Meeting Wave 1548 and on whatever device you are listening to, a warm welcome once again. This morning we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, and she's no stranger to Radio Islam. She's been coming on quite often and has shared so much insights and so much valuable tips that we can always learn from. But we're going to be talking about the weather before we do anything else, as usual. And our wonderful guest this morning is Michelle Kudzer from Brown Miller's Nursery. Hi, good morning, Michelle.
Morning, Ismail.
Well, you sound rather chirpy. I know spring is in the air. Well, and I must say to you, I don't know if you were so chirpy last week when we got in. It was warm weather, and then suddenly, whoa, cold came in, and now we're back to, well, it seems to be warming up. What's it happened like on your side? Because normally, I know, you're 2 or 3 degrees colder than what we are.
No, we certainly are. It's chilly in the morning, but it looks like it's going to be a glorious day. There's no clouds inside, so it really looks as though it's going to be a nice summer's day. But having said that, I've mentioned it on the radio before, my grandfather always said summer doesn't start until the 10th of October. So there's always a chance of cold before then.
Well, you know, it's 10th of October. I remember growing up and we once had snow at that time, late in September. So, and you know, with the snow that we've had in the last, well, just 2 or 3 days ago, I know it wasn't snowing out in our part of the world. I had Mama chatting to you and say, why didn't you bring the snow out to our side? Well, I don't know if one snow at this particular time, but really, the weather doesn't seem to, you know, give up. We're not too sure. Winter hasn't gone yet.
This is the problem, is that the weather patterns have changed so that you can almost say there's no pattern. It's not like it used to be. You could usually predict what's going to happen, but it's becoming more and more difficult because things are changing, because it's unusual to have snow at this time of year.
And you know, having said that, we all realize now that we're a water-stressed country and that we do not have, you know, abundance of rain, and we definitely need to take all the necessary steps that we can, you know, conserve, that we can, you know, harvest the rainwater, that we can use water that we, you know, when we are doing, you know, maybe showering, bathing, and all of those. And those are some of the tips and steps that we've learned in the last 2 or 3 seasons, and we're going to continue with that.
Most definitely. I think the problem is when it starts raining, people forget about that type of thing and forget that there's, as you said, we're a water-stressed country, and we all need to try and save water all the time, whether there's an abundance of rain or not.
You know, having said that, you know, while we're a water-stressed country, and then we've had a few drops, and I must say that drops, or the few, no matter how much it is, how little. I was speaking to a friend, and he said he was able to harvest 2,000 litres in the last year. Remember, we had a little bit of rain about a couple of days back, and he said he was able. So, you know, if you've got and you have the correct mechanisms put in place, you definitely can harvest enough water.
Yes, but that's amazing. 2,000 litres, that's really incredible.
You know, so like we said, it was the last shower, but this week we've had a little bit of rain, you know, when it was on, I think it was Wednesday when we started the cold coming in. I thought, well, we're going to have, you know, lots of rain, because they spoke about we may have flooding in certain parts of the country and so forth. Well, no rain on our side. I don't know, have you people had a little bit more than we?
No, we haven't had more again, no.
Okay, so we definitely find that, you know, like you said, weather patterns are changing, things are happening. And if we do not take, you know, that into account, it does make it more difficult when you are gardening. I want to start with a quote a friend of mine sent me. I thought, what a beautiful quote. He says, gardening is medicine that does not need a prescription and has no limit on dosage.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I thought it was brilliant because, you know, we sometimes wonder, and last week I spoke and I had my guest and we said, you know, there's so much that we get out of gardening besides just going out and, you know, getting the abundance of whatever we want, whether it's aesthetic or where we eat from that. But there's a lot of therapeutic, you know, effects from gardening, and it is a healthy exercise.
No, most definitely, because first of all, you get to be outside in the fresh air. And you do get exercise, bending, weeding, and cultivating, and so on. So definitely, it is a good form of exercise. And it just makes you feel better being outside.
And of course, a large dosage of vitamin, you know, that's what we're all talking about, a large dosage, you know, of vitamin D. You know, there's this, you know, quite strange, you know, when you talk to people, say that, you know, we have got to take these vitamin tablets because we don't have enough for vitamin D. And it's been recommended that you go out in the sun, but you need to take the, you know, necessary precautions when you're out there. Make sure you have a hat on there, your neck's covered and so forth. But if you're out in the garden, a very healthy dosage of vitamin D.
No, most definitely, especially for people that work in offices all day long. They need to get outside and get some sun.
Yeah, no, definitely. And again, talking about the fun, and I do this all the time. Mom is laughing already. I know, but getting your hands dirty, getting it on your knees, and look, the child comes out. You know, the child and all of us adults comes out when you're out there in the sand, and you're coming and you're pottering and you're getting your hands all dirty, and you know you've got to take a brush when you finish off and make sure that you know all the traces have gone. But I think it's fun. It's just like you said, it's so much fun when you're out in the garden.
No, most definitely.
And again, if you want to be out in the garden, don't look at it as a chore. Look at it as some, you know, it's going to bring you so much reward. And I think once it's a chore, you're not going to enjoy it as much as when you go out there and say it's lots of fun.
Exactly. And try and get the kids involved. I was so happy to see last weekend I had a customer and she was encouraging her children to plant seed. And it was so nice to see because people don't know where food comes from. They don't realize that you actually have to plant it to be able to pick it. A lot of people think you just go to the supermarket, but I don't know where they think it comes from. But it's very encouraging to see people getting their kids involved in gardening.
I know there was a research done, and I think when they ask young children, where do you get milk from? They say, from a supermarket. And where do you get that? They know it comes in a carton. So this shows how far we, you know, removed from reality. And I think these are things when you go out there and you get little, and you get young people involved, it brings them back to nature. And I think this is so, so, so important that we do that and we encourage our young ones.
No, for sure.
Now, you know, Michelle, you must have had a very, very busy week. I know that coming in with summer and, you know, spring is here upon us. What have you noticed as trends? What are people buying? Are they going still for food security? Are they doing both, a mixture of both? Or are they going and become more water wise and doing things like, succulents? What have you picked up as trends from your customers?
Most definitely succulents, and the problem is I find that a lot of people think they don't need any water, but they do still need water to really make them thrive. But succulents is a huge trend, and then veggies and fruit and herbs, people are buying more and more of that. We are still selling color. I would say people are buying less shrubs and definitely more color, and as in annuals and even perennials. People are realizing the value of perennials, that they come back year after year and you don't have to replant them like the annuals. But sadly, we're selling less shrubs. And what people need to realize is that shrubs are the backbone of the garden. They're sort of the framework. And also the shrubs are much tougher and can withstand longer periods of drought than what little seedlings can.
You know, while you've mentioned, you know, shrubs, I find that, you know, when people are out in the nursery, shrubs don't seem high on their list. You know, the annuals and the seedlings, and that is what they seem to be, you know, filling their trolleys with. Now, is there any sort of guidelines we can give people when they're looking for shrubs, whether it's an established garden or whether it's, you know, newly, you know, a garden that's just, you know, newly planted out? What are the guidelines, what watch points we should give them as far as shrubs are concerned?
I would say, first of all, the position. You need to make sure that you choose the right plant for the right position. So, for example, don't go and plant a shrub in shade that can't handle the shade, because often people that make that mistake, and then they don't understand why the stuff doesn't flourish. And, of course, your size of your garden and the size of your bed needs to be taken into account, because some shrubs can reach 3-4 meters in height, whereas others stay between sort of 1 and 1.5 meters. So that also needs to be taken into account. And also the shape of the shrub. You get so many different shapes. You get more sort of tall, narrow, I would almost like to say columnar shrubs, and others which are more rounded shrubs. So that also needs to be taken into account when you're buying your shrubs. And also, what is the purpose of it? Is it for a hedge that you're wanting it? Is it for a tall screen? Is it just for background color? You know, what are you wanting to get out of the shrubs? And many of the shrubs also do very well in containers, particularly the evergreen ones.
You know, when you speak about, you know, shrubs and, you know, do well and do not do well in certain, I also find that, you know, some people are scared of their plants. I don't know if I'm using the right word, but you find that once a plant is grown, they don't want to go near it. They say, no, I'm not going to touch it. It's going to, you know, and then the plant overtakes that whole space. And then, you know, they don't. So I don't know if people are scared or what would happen. I'm not even sure if that is a good word to use. But I find that once it's planted, then you say, but this so straggly and it's, you know, taking up all space. And they say, but can I cut it? Can I trim it? Can I do all of that? Of course you can. Am I right? You can. You should never let a garden take over your life. You should be able to control the garden. Is that the right word I'm using?
Yes, he says, no, most definitely. So, as you say, the people are scared to use the scissor. I think they have this phobia that if they cut it, it won't come back again. And 99% of plants, when you trim them back, they shoot beautifully and they make new side shoots.
That's the thing. You know, when I've gone, I say, but you know, but why are these people doing this? And then when you ask them, they say, but we're not sure how to do it or how to trim it. And like you said, I think even if you just give it a good haircut, the most that will happen is that, you know, you may not have as abundance of flowers, or may not, if it's rose in that case, whatever the case, but the next season would come back in, you know, its full glory and give you so much joy.
No, most definitely. Yesterday I was cutting some standard bay leaves, and I looked at them, and I looked at all these new shoots, and I thought, I have to cut them, because otherwise they're going to lose their shape. And I think this is the problem. People always see the new shoots and the flowers, and then they think, oh, I'm going to cut all my flowers off. But if you don't do it with your hedges and your lollipops, you do tend to lose their shape if you don't keep them in check.
So that's one of the things that I've you know, noticed. You know, when it comes to gardening, some people just let it go and go, and before they know, whoa, lo and behold, the garden is taken over, and they're not sure what is to be done, and then it looks, you know, so straggly and doesn't have the same appeal. So I think what we should be advising everybody, don't let it take over your, you know, the whole garden. Whatever it is, just trim it back. Doesn't matter the time of the year, the season. Would that be a right comment to make?
Yes and no, except when you're talking about spring flowering shrubs. Often if you cut them too early, you'd actually cut off all your flowers. So you'd have to wait for them to first flower before you trim them back.
Thank you for that one. Now, you know, October is normally associated and with roses. It's rose month. Now, rose is such a beautiful plant, and whilst it's not indigenous to South Africa, I think many a garden would have roses in them, and they bring so much joy with their shape, their color, their fragrance. And tell us about roses, because roses is not South African, but has become part of a garden that's coming from the UK, you know, coming via another country, came from China once, was reading, then going to Spain. But whatever the case may be, the root, it is now here in South Africa. And we have, you know, every year we have new roses coming up, new hybrids, named after very important and prominent personalities. Tell us about the roses and Rose Month. Yes, Rose Month.
Yes, no, October is definitely Rose Month, because they all come into bloom at this time of the year. And what's very nice, the listeners that want to buy roses, this is a good time to buy them, because in the garden center you'll actually be able to see the flower. Because as you mentioned, you get so many different types of roses, and I'd like to just quickly mention some of them. You get ground cover roses, which only reach about 300 millimeters in height, and sort of more ground hugging, which are suited to pots where they'll cascade over. Then you get miniature roses, which are sort of 3/4 meter to a meter. Then you get the floribunda roses, and those are the ones that you plant in the garden for color, like the iceberg. I'm sure everyone knows what the iceberg is, and those are floribundas. In other words, they have clusters of flowers, and they're more for show in the garden. And then you get the hybrid tea roses, which are your cutting roses, your exhibition roses. So those you would cut for the vase in the home. But here again, if now the listeners need to be sure that they're choosing the right one, because you also get low growers, which only reach knee height. You get others that reach hip height. You get others that reach shoulder height. So again, it depends on the space that you've got available. And apart from those, you also get new roses, which they call spire and panar roses, which are huge shrub roses reaching 3 meters in height, and they're freestanding. So they're not climbers. They're sort of freestanding pillars or shrubs, if I can put it that way. So it all depends on your space available. And again, what are you wanting the roses for? Are you wanting to cut them for the vase, or are you wanting them just for show in the garden? And then apart from that, you also get the standards, which are the lollipops. And again here, are you wanting them for cutting, or are you wanting them for show in the garden? Because a lot of people plant standard icebergs, and then they plant some perennials beneath them, which can look so nice along a driveway, for example.
Now, you know, when you talk roses, and, you know, people would say that they need a lot of care, a lot of water. Is that a myth or is that a reality?
No. Look, they need to be sprayed for things like mildew and black spot. because those are both fungal diseases, and for fungi you need to do preventative spraying. So yes, you do need to take care of them for that. They do get aphids as well, but as I mentioned previously, if you don't spray for the aphids, the ladybirds will arrive and they'll do their thing and actually look after them for you. But apart from that, and a little light prune in January, and then deadheading the old flowers, and then quite a severe prune in July, apart from that, roses are actually not so much work, and they just need regular feeding with something like a 315 once a month, or Ludwig's vigorosa, which would encourage blooms all the time. And if you consider that they flower virtually until the frost arrives, you're really getting so much flowering out of them.
Now, you know, when you talk about roses, and many of our listeners would, you know, what particularly have an interest in, fragrant roses, what would you recommend?
Oh, there's so many fragrant roses. One of my favorites is Just Joey, which is sort of a pale apricot color, and that's a fairly large rose, and that's got a lovely perfume. A lot of the new roses, they're definitely cultivating for perfume, and some of the new ones, they're also trying to get such a beautiful shape that they lose the perfume, unfortunately. But one of the pink ones, which is really nice, is Garden Queen, which is a huge rose, sort of a magenta color, and that's got a lovely smell. And in yellow, Germiston Gold has also got a lovely smell. This is the problem. There's so many favorites of mine. It's too many to mention. Even Double Delight has got a lovely smell, and that has sort of a cream center with scarlet edges on the rose. There's so many new two-tone roses and ones with striping and sort of almost mottling on the leaves. On the flower petals, at least.
You know, when we were growing up, the only rose that we knew was a deep red. You know, that deep, deep red. A beautiful fragrance. And I think in those days, they didn't hybridize them as they are doing them, and they were not experimenting. So I remember growing up, and, you know, it was this very, very, almost, how could I, it was such an intense redness. And I don't see that rose any longer. Do you know what the name was, and is it still available?
It's quite possible either Oklahoma or Papamélanse, because those are both too old, big red roses, dark red roses, and they are still available, yes, and most definitely worth planting.
You know, just something that came to my mind when I was talking about roses, I said, oh, well, those are the roses that we sort of knew. Well, if you wanted a rose, a color that you associated with a rose was red, you know, and growing up, and I'm talking this intense color, now, of course, we spoil for choices, we have different colors, and you said different types of fragrances and so forth, but again, like I said, now, these are the old-fashioned roses. I'm not very sure if they're still available, and is it worthwhile planting?
No, most definitely. There's many old varieties that really do still have a good scent, like those two that I mentioned, because I find often the new ones don't have quite the intensity of scent as what the old ones has. They seem to be more concerned about what the rose looks like than the fragrance. The fragrance is sort of just by the way. And with the fragrances, you definitely do get roses that have more of, for want of a better word, a fruity fragrance, and others have more of a real, what we remember as a rose fragrance. And again here, when people choose their roses for picking, try and plant colors that would match your decor. There's no point in picking red roses if your decor, for example, is pink in your lounge or your dining room where you're actually going to be using them. So plant colors that actually match your entertainment areas where you're going to be using them.
And then just the final question before we go for a break with regards to roses. You know, some people would love to have made them into teas. Now, in the old days, they used to have specific type of roses. They take the petals and then they steep them. Would you recommend any particular, or would any rose do for a deep and a lovely afternoon tea?
No, there are some that, obviously these with more fragrance, they would work better, but there are some that are definitely better suited for teas. But I couldn't give you a name just off the hat like that, but not all make good teas, let me put it that way.
Yes, I know, not all would give you, because I think some would give you a more bitter taste, and then the others I found that perhaps more fragrance, and if you want something that has almost a tea fragrance, then you'd look for another plant, which is very much indigenous to South Africa, but we'll talk about that when we get back. Is that fine?
Yes, no problem.
We're going to go for a break, come back when we'll continue, stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Warm welcome to all of you tuning in. And my name is Ismail Viriyawa, program Dare to be Different. Just wonderful to have all of you with us. And you can join our conversation at any time. The number to dial 854-1540. The number to dial 854-1540. And we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest with us. It's Michelle Kutzer from Brown Miller's Nursery. And we're talking about gardening in the month of October. And we've got some questions that have come through. And Remember, if you have any particular questions you'd like, please send that through as well. Hi, good morning, Michelle.
Morning, Isma.
I've got a couple of questions that have come through. One is that I've got roses that have opened, taken, they look like towers, and they're supposed to be bushes. Is it too late to trim, or should I trim them, and what should I be doing, or should I prune them? What advice?
It is a bit late to prune them because you should be pruning in at the end of July or beginning of August, severe pruning. And when I say severe pruning, down to 300 millimeters. And then in January, one does usually a light pruning, which gives you then an autumn flush of flowers again. So if you haven't done it, I certainly wouldn't do it now because they've already got flowers. So rather enjoy the flowers and then trim them back a little bit in January. And then next year, make sure in winter that you do a severe pruning.
Thank you very much for that. So there's no way. What happens if they just want to, just despite the flowers, still want to prune because it's looking very shaggy?
They can, but I wouldn't do it severely. I wouldn't prune them back more than halfway.
Thank you very much for that one. And next question coming through. I've got a patch of grass in my garden, and it's not doing very well. What would you recommend that I revive that?
It depends on what's wrong with the grass. If it's very compacted, then one needs to make a few holes and sweep some coarse river sand in to solve the drainage problem. Otherwise, if it's just not growing and not green, a fertilizer that's high in nitrogen, in other words, the first number must be high. So, for example, a 713 or a 321 should definitely sort the problem out because that will encourage growth again.
Thank you very much. And again, still with grasses, I'd want to plant some grass and I want to start from seed. What you would recommend? Would it be kikuyu or any other grass? And I want something that remains green all the time.
I certainly would never recommend kikuyu for the simple reason that kikuyu is one of the thirstiest lawns. So it depends on which area they're in. If they're in a warmer area, they could definitely do LM, as in Lorenzo marked LM, or they often call it Berea grass. That remains green in the frost-free areas, and it creeps half on top of the ground. It grows in sun or shade. It doesn't require as much water as many of the other lawns, and it doesn't require as much mowing either. But if the person is in a frosty area and they're looking for an evergreen lawn, then it would be something like Mayfit Shade Over for the shady areas, or Mayfit All Seasons Evergreen for the sunnier areas. And these are all tufted grasses. So in other words, they can't be cut as short as your normal lawn, so they're not creeping grasses.
And then would they do well with CAS from seed?
Yes, most definitely from seed. The LM is also available in seed, and then Mayfit as well as Stark is, and Kershaw's have different, what they call cool season grasses, which are these tough grasses, that there's some for sun and some for shade, so they're non-creeping grass.
And could you mix the two?
No, definitely not, because of your cutting height and your watering. Your cool season grasses just seem to need more regular watering because their roots aren't so deep, whereas something like kikuyu lawn and LM lawn can go longer without water than your tuft lawn.
And for example, you spoke about the shade and the sunny spots. Would that be mixed perhaps? Could you mix that one?
No, definitely not. Some of the varieties are more suited to full sun and light shade, whereas others are more suited to deeper shade.
Thank you very much for that particular quick answer. Someone asked about repotting of orchids. Is that difficult and should be done now, and the procedure?
No, it's not difficult. It again depends on which orchid. If it's a cymbidium variety, which is the one that looks like tall, narrow grass leaves, for want of a better word, those normally flower from March. April to May up until September. So you wait until they finish flowering and then you can repot them. And the Phalaenopsis, which are the moth orchids, they have the broad leaves, very much like a Clivia or Amaryllis. You must basically wait also until they've finished flowering. And one important thing I must mention is that the orchids don't like huge pots. They like to be full in their pots, so one needs to make sure that they're literally starting to climb out the top of the pot before you give them a bigger pot. And when you do, just give it a slightly bigger pot than the current one. And then usually it's a bark mixture that they get planted in. The orchid mix consists mainly of bark, and it's more there to sort of just support the plant. So you would fill up your new pot at the bottom with bark, put your new plant in, and then just fill up on the side as well.
So they would do better in a crowded container than in one that is very big?
Most definitely, yes.
Thank you very much for that one. And still a couple other questions that have come through. what could I plant in deep shade with, I think it's, yes, it says perennials, deep shade perennials. Are there any deep shade perennials that has color?
Your clivias can handle quite deep shade, and your ground orchid, its real name is Blitzella, and the widow's tears, Tradescantia, that has very sort of grass-like leaves, about 300 millimeters tall, with very nice deep blue flowers. And the lily turf, the liriope, or some people pronounce it liriope, that has very nice lime green foliage and then also deep mauve flowers, and they can also handle quite deep shade.
And so these are all perennials?
That's right, yes.
Okay. And then would they do well, you know, with regards to, you know, water? Would they have to be zoned in a high water, you know, frequency or one that needs very little water?
I would say the lily turf could go in your low water zone and the others in your medium water zone. They definitely don't need nearly as much as other flowering plants or annuals.
Still a question with roses, you know, I was just speaking about roses. Are they guzzlers with regards to water?
No, roses are quite water-wise. They definitely don't need nearly as much water as many of the other plants. But they don't like to be waterlogged, so that's quite important.
Thank you very much for that. And then still with perennials, do you have any suggestions for colourful perennials that they could plant at this time of the year?
In sunny areas, the gora, which is the butterfly bush that many people call it, there's so many different salvias. Even your normal sage that you use in cooking, that makes a lovely plant with purple flowers, looks very much like a lavender if you look at it quickly. The blue perennial salvia, as well as the pineapple sage, that's a lovely colourful sage with red flowers, which reaches about a meter or so. Again, the herbs, the yarrow, also makes a lovely plant of about a three-quarter meter, and you get them in various colors, yellows and pinks and deep maroons. The Inca lilies are, of course, very rewarding, particularly for those that like to cut flowers for the vase, and penstemons, delphiniums, gazanias. And, of course, at this time of the year, you'll find dahlia bulbs in the garden centers, and they just become more and more every year. And they will need staking. Those with bigger areas can consider cannas. They do extremely well. And arum lilies, Cape daisies, agapanthus will be coming into bloom fairly soon, as well as the crocosmia, which is the orange. They call it a falling star, long stack-shaped leaves with orange star flowers. And bulbinella. Bulbinella is, to me, quite an important thing, because it helps very much for bee stings. It's a succulent plant, which is more of a ground cover with yellow flowers, and you can use the sap for bee stings, so it's always handy to have close by. And then the pineapple lily, even though it's not colorful, although to me green is also a color, it makes the most beautiful green pineapple flowers, which is quite unusual. And the clivias as well for the shadier areas, and things like aquilegia, the columbine, they also do very well in the shady areas, as do foxgloves.
So actually, are we spoiled for choices?
Most definitely, yes. And as I've mentioned before, people must realize the perennials, you buy them once, and every year they just become more and more. Some of them remain evergreen, others are dormant in winter and then shoot again in spring.
What's the watch point? Once you have them in the ground and you want to plant, should you be careful, or can you just plant over them? You know, I'm just trying to understand. So you've got to, you know, you have the summer you've got the perennials, and then you know, you want them in winter, something else to grow as well, also another winter perennial. Could you plant this over that one?
Basically around them, and with your bulb perennials, in other words, things like the dahlias and the pineapple lilies and the clivias and those types, particularly the ones that disappear, you would have to mark the position with a stick or something. And even your lilies, you would have to give them a stake anyway. So you'd probably have a stake or two in that area to mark where they are, so that you could plant between them. And most of the other perennials that die down, you'll actually still see the plant remaining. You might not see many leaves, but you'll see where the plant is, so you could plant your winter color between that.
And these would definitely attract birds, hojas, butterflies, bees, dragonflies, everything else.
Most definitely the gora and the salvias, yes, because they flower so abundantly and the bees really love them.
Okay, someone's asked a question, I'm just trying to... The pink basil. Now, yes. The pink basil is perennial, is that right?
It's perennial in frost-free areas, yes, and that the butterflies love that, and the bees as well.
And could it be used as either in culinary or medicinal uses? Does it have that as the ordinary basil does?
Yes, it does, but the flavor isn't nearly as nice as the ordinary basil.
Okay, and then quickly, you know, there's a question that comes in, I think, about wild garlic. I think, just tell us about the wild garlic.
Wild garlic is Tulbachia. It's indigenous. It looks very much like an agapanthus leaf. They're slightly grayer. They're water-wise, and then they make miniature purple agapanthus flowers, for want of a better word, and they give off a garlic scent. Many of people use them around their veggie gardens because of the smell of the garlic. They believe that it discourages aphids.
And some people even use it, you know, when they don't have garlic, you know, they cut off that, and that's what I was told, put into some salads and so forth. So
I believe so.
I haven't used it in that format, but I know that I've been told that people do use that as, you know, when you don't have garlic, you could use some of that because the fragrance and the smell is there. It may not be as intense, but definitely has it.
Yes, I've also been told that. I've never tried it, but I've also been told that.
Let's go on to our callers. We've got a call online now. Hello, Assalamu alaikum. Please go ahead.
Walaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you, Uncle Ismail?
Very well, alhamdulillah. Go ahead.
How are you, Michelle?
Well, thank you.
I'm a very good listener of yours. I need to know the orchids.
The orchids, yes.
You say the purplish. And you say it must be planted in the shade. And a purple lily that looks like an orchid, it's planted under the bottle brush tree. If I want to plant orchids, can I plant it there?
No, this is the one I mentioned was a ground orchid, and its real name is Blitzilla. It has long spear-shaped leaves which are folded very much like a concertina. That was the plant that I was referring to. So it's not a proper orchid, but the flowers look like a deep magenta purple orchid.
So it isn't an orchid?
No, I don't think.
It's not a real orchid. It's called a ground orchid. But orchids definitely need light, your normal orchids. You wouldn't be able to plant them in deep shade, no.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have we answered your questions? I think we've lost the caller now. Another caller? Do you have another call in line? The number to dial this morning, 854-1540. Any queries, any questions that you'd like Michelle to help with? You got, again, number 854-1540. We've got quite a number of questions that have come through already. With regards to a pomegranate, it's flowering. Do I need to give it a light pruning? I haven't done that earlier on.
No, pomegranates really don't need pruning. One can leave them. It's basically just if you've got wild shoots that are growing out of shape, but they normally don't require much pruning at all.
I had a query last week about a person who says that she's got a stone fruit and it's got flowers on them. Is this the right time now to spray so that the insects, she says, are they not able to eat the fruit because whenever it ripens, it has hawks and insects in it. When's the right time to spray?
With most of your stone fruit, and just to clarify, stone fruit is peaches, plums, apricots, that type of thing, you spray at 75% petal drop. So in other words, you wait for 3/4 of the flowers to have dropped, and you start spraying then. And depending on the product you're using, most of them require an additional spray every 2 weeks. And then most importantly, there's always a waiting period from when you've last sprayed before you can actually harvest and eat the fruit.
Okay, and with regards to pecan nuts, do they do well on their own or do they need a partner?
Pecans are supposed to be self-pollinating. However, they recommend that if you plant more than one variety, you'll definitely have a much better harvest.
Okay, and do you know how long it takes from the time you plant to bear fruit?
And you're looking at anything from 5 to 7 years.
5 to 7 years. Okay, thank you very much for that. I'm just checking on some of the questions that have come through. Michelle, and with regards to fruit and veg, herbs and veggies, are there many varieties already available? I know we spoke about last 2 weeks ago and said they were not available. Growers haven't got them as yet. Do you know they've come into the centres?
I know some of the tomato varieties have come in. The Tumbler, I think the one is called, that I'm thinking of, which is a short variety with small cherry tomatoes, which are suited to hanging baskets. And the others, not yet. I think it's because of this late cold we've had. But you should be seeing them in the garden centers very soon, particularly the dwarf brinjals and the dwarf cucumbers should be coming in soon.
Still a question coming through with regards to pots. I want you to do a salad, a pot. what would you recommend I put into a salad pot?
Definitely some parsley, some chives, basil, and then your different lettuces, your crisp lettuce, and I prefer the butter lettuce and the lettuce that you just pick the leaves of, because then you don't harvest the whole thing at once, you just pick the leaves that you require.
So you just cut off, you tear them off or you cut them off?
You can cut them off or break them off carefully, yes.
Question still with regards to food security. What about baby spinach? Is that available and does it do well?
Baby spinach is available. The only thing is I find that the minute it starts getting hot, it doesn't handle the heat. So I've actually stopped ordering it now. But it seems to do much better in winter than in summer, particularly in areas like, for example, the Vaal Triangle that has a very dry heat.
I've got a question that has been passed over to me. I have a fig tree. It has two figs, and I have a cherry tree as well. How should I take care of them?
Basically, the fig is really easy to take care of. You just need to feed it regularly with something like a 315. Figs are very easy. The big thing is they mustn't get cold in winter. And your cherry tree, depending on whether you planted a self-pollinating variety or not, you might have to get the right mate to pollinate it. And cherries also don't like to be waterlogged, which is quite important. And the best fertilizer that I can recommend for any fruits or veggies, things like tomatoes and that type of thing, as well as citrus, would be your 315, which you could use for any fruit.
Question coming in, before I can get to my figs, I think the birds have a party. Any way to stop or to deter that?
Shame, the birds are also hungry. I believe that they don't like the smell of seaweed, or the taste of seaweed, so a fertilizer like Calpac or Seagrow that has got seaweed in, you could certainly spray them with that to try and deter them. And you can take old CDs or old lids of tins and actually hang them up so that when they move in the wind, apparently that chases the birds away as well.
Seaweed, so if you do you spray it on, and I suppose that it's the smell that that deters them, and then it has, it's not harmful to human beings?
No, because it's a fertilizer at the same time, so it would encourage your plant to look good anyway.
So do you spray it on, or do you dig it in?
You can spray it on, yes.
You can spray it on. Thank you very much for that. Plenty of questions still coming. Well, it's that time of the year. That's that time of the year. And
yes.
What other things have you noticed, in the garden centers, the trends? We were talking about trends, and we spoke about, succulents being a very big trend. And were there any other trends that you've noticed that people are sort of following, on the last couple of years? Because we've been, having these water restrictions and so forth. Any other trends that you've picked up or that you've noticed?
People are continuously gardening more in pots. I think it's purely because of space constraints, and they're even planting their veggies in pots as well. And you'll see with the lollipops, one doesn't seem to get those tall ones that you're used to. All the growers seem to be doing smaller, shorter lollipops, which are better suited to pots because they don't fall over. And a lot of the customers are buying lollipops, and hedging is also very in fashion at the moment, it seems to be. And of course, lavenders remain popular.
So these are more the trendier stuff?
Well, that I have found in our area, yes.
Okay, and then, just again with pots, the question coming through, do I have to, remove the soil every year, or should I just enrich the soil? What is your suggestion?
It's better to put new potting soil in, unless it's something like annuals that you're planting that don't have a very deep root system. Then what you could do in that case, you could just remove the top third of the pot and then put new potting soil at the top. Whereas if it's a shrub or something with deeper roots, I would certainly recommend rather replacing the potting soil with fresh potting soil. And one can always add something like bone meal, which is a root encourager, to your potting soil to make sure that whatever you're planting has a good start to get the roots growing.
Question, I've got very large pots. I'm not talking about small, it says very, very huge ones. What should I do? Just take off the top third, or should I turn the pot upside down and remove all the soil, which is quite an arduous task?
Yes. Again, it depends on what one's planting, but if it's a very big pot, I would say yes, remove the top half or the top third, and then mix in potting soil again.
Thank you very much for that. Now, Michelle, we're coming almost to the close of the program. What have you got for our listeners? Well, I know you have always some lovely stuff on. What do you have available?
There's so much color at the moment. I've just received the delivery of Ludwig's roses on Thursday, and the roses are looking absolutely amazing, and the standards as well. They're all in full bloom, so it's so easy to choose them. I've got lavenders, I've got geraniums, I've got grenadillas, I've got all the herbs, I've got about 10 different tomato varieties and about 5 different chili and pepper varieties, and lots of perennials, lots of color for the garden, and of course the standby shrubs. And the aces are looking amazing at the moment. That's the Japanese maple.
You know, just speaking about geraniums, do you have both the rose-scented and the lemon-scented ones? Because I think those make wonderful teas as well.
They do, yes. Now, I do have both of them available as well. The scented geraniums are really nice because they do very well in pots, and they are definitely water-wise, and they need full sun.
Okay, and you recommend them for pots rather than growing them into the ground?
You can do them in the garden, but then in frosty areas, I would recommend rather in pots so that you can push the pot onto a protected spot for the winter.
I was just chatting to somebody, and he says that he keeps most of his plants in pots, but then he submerges the pot into the ground, and then what he does is, you know, at the end of the season, just removes the pot and plants something else in its place. Is that a good idea?
And you can do that. The only problem is you run the risk that the roots actually grow through the pot into the soil, and obviously you can't see that happening. So that's the only drawback there.
And then would you recommend it, that he puts it into is the plastic pot fine, or does it have to be any specific type of a pot?
No, plastic pot is perfect. As I said, the only problem is you can't see whether the roots go through into the soil.
Well, thank you very much. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of another wonderful, wonderful program. We set out to do so much, but when we get through halfway, there's so many other things that we've been chatting about. But well, Michelle, thank you very much for being my guest once again, and we'll talk to you soon. And I know that people will be coming out to visit you. Just quickly, your directions to Brant Miller's.
From Roshni, we're about the second traffic light right, and we're down that road on the left-hand side.
Well, thank you very much.
So on the northern side of town.
So if anyone is in that area, please you could pay Michelle a visit. She's always there and give you lots of wonderful advice, and you could be chatting to her as well. It's all from me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Jazakumullah. Thanks, Michelle. You take care.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you, Ismail. Bye.
Thanks, Ta. Bye-bye. And there was Michelle Kunze from Brant Miller's Nursery. Wonderful, wonderful advice this morning. We've shared so much from you. And if you are in the garden, I'm sure that you can take necessary precautions. Make sure that your neck is covered. The intensity of the heat is there. Make sure you've got water at hand. And you enjoy your garden. That's all for me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And waiting on the wings is Maulana Wajah to take us through the news.